How's it going, everyone? Dr. Mike Mena here for yet another article read aloud. This time, I'll be performing my newest publication titled The Languaging Representations Chart, Teaching and Learning Translanguaging Theory, found in the first issue of Racial Justice in Multilingual Education. Now, as the title says, we will be referencing something called the Languaging Representations Chart, or I'll just call it the LRC for short. Now, it would be best to have the chart with you, but if you don't, I'll be describing what I'm looking at. For those moments, I will apply this effect to the sound of my voice. Remember, if I'm reading too slow or too quickly, you may increase or decrease the speed in your audio player. Other than that, I hope you enjoy. Let's get into it. The Languaging Representations Chart, Teaching and Learning Translanguaging Theory, published in Racial Justice in Multilingual Education in 2025, read by the author himself. Abstract. Translanguaging theory not only offers an alternative approach to language learning in schools, but an alternative way to reimagine language, language users, and even the world. In what follows, and using the Languaging Representations Chart, or the LRC, I illustrate how two approaches to language learning, translanguaging and code switching, each entail an imagined sociopolitical version of reality that, if centered, can help clarify the differences and theoretical premises promoted within each pedagogical world. While the LRC was designed to fast-track the comprehension of terminological subtleties and differences, the ultimate goal is to move past the question, how are the keywords and concepts defined differently from each perspective, to the question, what does each perspective offer, create, promote, and how? Multiple supplemental resources are provided to listeners, including downloadable PDFs of the LRC, a read-along audio track, what you're listening to now, and finally, an explanatory YouTube video guide using the LRC. Epigraph. The lecturer who foregoes the marvels of professorial language and gives methodical and explicit presentations risks appearing as a primary school teacher who has strayed into higher education, or as a nonconformist who will also find the institution turned against him, even though he has answered real needs and unacknowledged expectations. Bourdieu and others. Academic Discourse, Linguistic Misunderstanding and Professorial Power, published in 1965. Introduction, The Languaging Representations Chart. Translanguaging theory is notoriously difficult to understand. Not only does it offer a different approach to language learning in public schools, but an alternative way to imagine how language and language users exist in society. A way to reimagine the world in a different way than what is offered by code-switching approaches. Here, I suggest that it is possible to focus on those differently imagined worlds to more easily grasp the seemingly never-ending terminological differences that make translanguaging theory feel so confusing. We can instead center on how each pedagogical perspective offers, creates, and promotes a unique reality with certain kinds of language users. To better illustrate, and using the Languaging Representations Chart, I present code-switching pedagogies as creating and promoting a particular kind of worldview with a split bilingual subject who is said to switch between pre-made institutional categories. For example, L1 and L2, or perhaps home language versus school language. Translanguaging pedagogies, on the other hand, I present as creating and promoting a different kind of worldview with a different kind of language user, one with a unified linguistic repertoire unsplit by the usual pre-made institutional categories. For example, L1 and L2, or home language versus school language. In what follows, I illustrate how each approach entails an imagined sociopolitical version of reality that, if centered, can make the comprehension of all the keywords and concepts a far less daunting task. In an interview with Nelson Flores, we spoke of his famous blog post, "Let's Not Forget Translanguaging is a Political Act." During our conversation, I asked if anything might be changed about that original blog post. Flores suggested an updated title, "Let's Not Forget That Representations of Language Are Political Acts." Such a title highlights how both translanguaging and code-switching approaches entail a political worldview that imagines language and language users to exist in a specific way. In what follows, I offer the Languaging Representations Chart as a pedagogical tool to more effectively move beyond common terminological debates and confusions. While the chart's primary function is to more efficiently learn and separate the differing definitions of common keywords and concepts, it also presents each perspective as its own fully developed worldview. My goal is to move beyond the question, how are the keywords and concepts defined differently in each perspective, to the new question, what does each perspective offer, create, promote, and how? In what follows, I first provide some background information on the development of the Languaging Representations Chart, or the LRC, focusing on why the chart was developed and where it will be most useful. Next, I address two common political ideological stances educators and student educators bring to the classroom that tend to activate an oppositional relationship between code switching and translanguaging perspectives. Each of these ideological stances become potential barriers to a deeper understanding of translanguaging theory. Then, and using the LRC, I offer a three-step exercise that I use to help students practice deploying theoretical keywords and concepts. I end by exposing the limitations of the simplified imagery seen in the LRC, but I also suggest how my approach can be used to undermine perceived theoretical oppositions that tend to rearticulate status quo power relations, one of those so-called oppositions being theory versus practice. Developing the Languaging Representations Chart. Before diving into pedagogical strategies, some notes on my training as a high school teacher, as a scholar, and as a so-called academic influencer, each of which contributing to my philosophical approach to teaching and the production of the Languaging Representations Chart. My tenure as a high school teacher taught me much about pacing, about how much new information can be held and how fast. It also taught me to meet my students on their home turf, or what I elsewhere call transposition pedagogy. That is, start with the language students already know and plan from there. To be clear, I don't find myself doing anything special, other than considering myself first and foremost a high school teacher that somehow strayed into higher education. That just means that I invest much time in locating where misunderstandings happen. And, inspired by my high school teaching, I would never assume students would, quote, eventually just get it, end quote. Such a pedagogical strategy would fail in high school in a most spectacular fashion. I suspect this approach fails in higher education as well. My earliest public presentations of translanguaging theory can be viewed on the YouTube channel, The Social Life of Language, with Dr. Mike Mena. It would be a couple years before having the opportunity to assign these videos in my own courses, where I could better determine what was effective and what was not. Luckily, I could immediately sense there was simply not enough time in a 15-minute video to break through the common beliefs and ideologies about language that folks arrive with. Those ideological walls have likely been hardening since a student's first day in public school, when children are first institutionally classified based on linguistic abilities and/or competencies. For example, classifications like monolingual, or English speaker, or ESL, etc., etc. We might remember that each classification smuggles in hegemonic theories of language and language users, and that most students have experienced their world as some kind of categorized linguistic subject within hegemonic theories of language. Breaking through these ideological walls must be done strategically. It can take weeks, months, and yes, even years. And this is why I created the Languaging Representations Chart. To help avoid some very common terminological misunderstandings and confusions, and also to help speed up the process of learning, ironically, through slowing down the overall pace of learning.
Side note, for those unable to look at the LRC, let me offer a brief description. The chart is on a horizontally formatted page with a vertical line drawn down the middle, dividing the page in half, a left side and a right side. On each side of the vertical line is a generic shape of a human head. So that means we have two mirrored human heads side by side. The left side of the page is labeled code switching, and the right side of the page is labeled translanguaging. So each side represents a way to imagine what language and language users are. Notably, on the code switching side, the shape of the human head, or the human mind, is drawn split in half with a dotted line to resemble the place where speakers are said to code switch or cross back and forth from one grammar system to another. For example, switching between named languages like English and Spanish. I call this an image of the split bilingual subject, a term I use in the text. On the translanguaging side of the LRC, the human head is not split in half by a dotted line, meaning the way language exists is different. The way language users exist is different. Ultimately, there is a split bilingual subject on the code switching side and a whole unsplit person or unsplit languager on the translanguaging side. And finally, on each side, under each head, there are five simple parameters or guiding assumptions important to each pedagogical approach. These five parameters will become important later when we cover how to use the chart. Back to the main text.
The primary inspiration for the LRC lay in the first semester I attempted to teach translanguaging theory to graduate students, most of whom were full-time bilingual educators who walked into the class claiming to understand translanguaging as the practice of, quote, freely switching between languages, end quote. In these kinds of statements, we see the notion of autonomous, quote, languages, like Spanish, English, etc., forced into a statement describing translanguaging pedagogy, where autonomous languages do not exist in the same way. In doing so, these students recreated the figure of the split bilingual subject, who switches, in a statement meant to be about translanguaging theory. In the LRC, we see two languaging representations, two perspectives, and/or two pedagogical approaches labeled code switching and translanguaging. My students are explicitly told that each perspective uses a different set of keywords and concepts, even when they look like the same word, because each perspective sees different things as relevant. Each side offers, creates, and promotes its own version of the language user and of reality. The instructions written on the LRC state to print and fold. This forces students to become hyper-conscious of separating perspectives and to use only one set of keywords and concepts at a time. In the opening lessons to translanguaging theory, I frame initial discussions to using this illustration with a perspectival mountain metaphor. It goes as follows. Imagine standing on opposite sides of a mountain. When you are on one side, you notice it's really steep and perfect for skiing. When you go to the other side of the mountain, you see it's flatter, perfect for camping or maybe building a log cabin. Both sides are different. Both encourage different possibilities, even though it's the exact same mountain. Now, replace the mountain with a language user. Depending on whether you're viewing the language user from the code switching perspective or from the translanguaging perspective, you will notice totally different things, a different worldview, a different reality. Neither side is better or worse, new and old, or progressive versus outdated. Right now, we are just concentrating on what they can see, the possibilities that each side might have. We are just practicing using all the big words and concepts. End of metaphor. Those familiar with translanguaging theory may not take kindly to the idea that both perspectives are presented as politically neutral, as if translanguaging theory was not among the most politically subversive reimaginings of languaging and languagers. Yes, I agree, but at certain moments, I'm attempting to clear the conceptual terrain to strategically repopulate it back up with clarified keywords and concepts. Up next, I suggest there are two powerful student attitudes in the classroom, and each require pedagogical strategies to overcome. Two common student ideological stances. There are two ideological stances at the graduate and undergraduate level that have proven to be a consistent hurdle in my courses when trying to differentiate code-switching and translanguaging pedagogies. Both of these stances, rooted in socialized language ideologies, set up a range of difficulties. Those stances being, 1, students wanted approaches to work together, or 2, students wanted approaches to battle each other. Note how each attitude positions the pedagogical approaches as perpetually interacting. Those wanting approaches to, quote, work together, often search for ways that keywords might overlap, which often resulted in the conflation of very basic concepts. For example, the term language user has different definitions depending on the pedagogical approach, because the concept language and how it's used means something different depending on which pedagogy is being referenced. I was most definitely one of these college students. I recognize now that I was always partially conflating terms, like language user, as a coping mechanism to help stay afloat while experiencing a sense of drowning in all the new keywords and concepts. Yet there was another near opposite stance that was just as popular emanating from the more activist, politically charged students. Often these students wanted pedagogies to, quote, battle each other, the intention being to, quote, prove translanguaging offers a, quote, better way forward. That's great, love that, but that is a different conversation. In my courses, political assertions deployed while first learning the keywords and concepts have never produced a recognizable pattern that I could strategically teach from. And more often than not, confusion reigned if those political comments deployed concepts in a way the larger class was not theoretically prepared for. In my opinion, it's crucial that each student confidently own each keyword from the code-switching perspective because, eventually, students must be efficient at transporting keywords and concepts from one perspective to the other, while also articulating how a concept might be deconstructed at a theoretical level. We might remember that language teaching in an American school means you are always already invoking institutionally legible keywords and concepts from the code-switching pedagogies. For example, terms like L1 and L2, even the word bilingual, or even the grouping of linguistic features known as English or Spanish or whatever. Each concept smuggles in a wide range of linguistic ideological assumptions that, if addressed explicitly, tend to answer many of the first questions students have about translanguaging pedagogy long before getting to translanguaging theory itself. Two, pedagogical strategies. Because students often fixated on how both perspectives interacted, either working together or battling one another, I decided to politically neutralize both perspectives, presenting them as totally different and separate worldviews that help create and promote different realities. Now, before accusations of translanguaging heresy arise, allow me to backtrack just a bit to suggest where I place the political in the larger structure of the course. In other words, there are two larger strategies working underneath that keep both approaches explicitly political. Teaching strategy one, when to introduce the named language. I have a general understanding of how long my students take to understand specific keywords and concepts. I also have a separate idea of how long it takes my students to accept alternate explanations of the world. Meaning, I make a general distinction between two kinds of learning. There is the understanding of the theoretical premises, and then there is the acceptance of those premises as a possible alternative but legitimate worldview. The first time I taught this material, and against my better judgment, I tried the popular approach I saw in various syllabi. That technique being, front-load the syllabus with a wide theoretical overview, with the expectation that the class will work its way out of the theoretical weeds over the span of the semester. That is, they will, quote, eventually just get it, end quote. Keep in mind, I consider myself a high school teacher first and foremost, meaning I teach with empathy and meticulous planning. I immediately sensed that my first syllabus gave too much unsupervised self-teaching responsibility to the students themselves. Underneath this syllabus structure was an ideological stance or an implied messaging about who was responsible for teaching in my course. For example, such a syllabus structure might imply something like,
I, the professor, am trusting you, the student, to read all this and eventually get yourself out of the theoretical weeds. I will help you, but you are primarily responsible for teaching yourself. Good luck.
I could not imagine teaching high school students with this kind of philosophy. It would fail spectacularly. I consider lessons failures when it feels like I'm pulling teeth, when students constantly need me to re-clarify something. To be clear, my frustration lay entirely in my own failure to create an effective teaching strategy. After all, in that space, I am the expert, and I should be an expert at teaching my expertise in a comprehensible way to non-experts. Looking back at how I front-loaded my first syllabus with all that dense translanguaging theory, I realize now I was not being empathetic to the pacing and learning needs of my students. So how did I adjust? I take pacing seriously, giving time to understand, but also giving time to accept new knowledge. In fact, I spent almost two-thirds of each semester concentrating on excavating the ideological assertions and the worldview held within the code-switching perspective and only the code-switching perspective. And one way to critique those ideological assumptions is through the concept known as the named language, a term developed by scholars McConey and Pennycook, which posits that languages were given names as one way to help objectify and govern subordinated and racialized populations. When constructing my first translanguaging course syllabi, I generally saw McConey and Pennycook's work front-loaded alongside all the other foundational and introductory texts to translanguaging theory. After all, it is a central text. Here, I suggest that the named language is exactly one of those concepts that takes time for students to accept. In my opinion, this reading should be given time to breathe, assigned separately and long before the foundational translanguaging texts. The proposition that languages are political inventions is generally understood by most students. They'll say things like, just the way Columbus invented America, colonial administrators invented languages. However, not all students automatically accept the idea that named languages can be so powerful and so integral to the domination of marginalized groups. Some students need to be convinced a bit more before such a premise is accepted. Luckily, the concept of the named language also fits perfectly into critiques of code-switching pedagogies, which uncritically use named languages. And at this point of the semester, this is a good thing. This helps solidify the concept long before attempting to deconstruct it, or to use McConey and Pennycook's word, to disinvent it. And perhaps most importantly, this is one less difficult to accept concept to tackle during your first translanguaging lectures. To convince the students that need more time to accept the power of named languages, I assign readings that analyze how code-switching pedagogies are harmful while constantly reminding students that schools are using those named languages to inflict that exact harm. I suspect the reason my students want to learn how to differentiate translanguaging from code-switching is precisely because they have accepted the idea that there are devastating power relations dripping from these things called named languages. There have been times where the excitement was palpable. Students wanted a new path forward. They wanted to know what worldview translanguaging theory could offer or could create, which is an entirely different ideological stance from wanting the perspectives to either work together or battle each other. And best of all, students are only one step away from thinking of translanguaging as a decolonial project, as a way of unsettling our entire linguistic reality, as a way of dethroning the figure of the split bilingual subject that is created and promoted within code-switching pedagogies. But what about all the other keywords and concepts? And how would a student know if they're using terminology properly? Here, I direct your attention back to the Languaging Representations Chart, or the LRC, specifically looking at the five numbered assertions within the code-switching perspective. These are five simple-looking premises that I drop into discussions strategically and repeatedly over the first two-thirds of the semester. These five premises might be described as obvious statements, yet so common as to be hidden in plain sight. Let's call this a set of theoretical premises, or parameters, or assumptions. Or, more simply, let's call these the house rules of the code-switching approach. For example, the first house rule states that code-switching perspectives use pre-made institutional categories. So when analyzing something from the code-switching perspective, it is correct or accurate to say something like the following.
That bilingual child speaks two languages, the language named English and the language named Spanish. That child has a split linguistic repertoire and code switches between their L1 and L2.
Such a statement holds true when following all five parameters and all five premises, all five house rules of the code-switching perspective. The goal is to know these first five code-switching house rules from memory. So I focus two-thirds of the semester to learning just the code-switching side of the chart. But why? Because when it's time to flip the chart over, each one of those rules exists in a slightly modified, inverted, or sometimes opposite form, meaning once students have learned the parameters of the code-switching side, they have indirectly learned all the parameters of the translanguaging side as well. After all, each translanguaging rule is written as an inversion or as a qualification of a code-switching rule. For example, the first numbered assertion on the translanguaging side appears to invert the first numbered assertion on the code-switching side, and so on. The simple language, the ordering, and the numbering of those house rules are intentional. However, as the semester progresses into translanguaging theory, a new practical problem emerges that needs to be addressed. When speaking with a non-specialist, for example, a student, parent, administrator, counselor, etc., how does one transport concepts from one pedagogical perspective to another without breaking the house rules? Or phrased another way, even when teachers use translanguaging approaches in their classroom, they will likely work at a school structured by code-switching terminology. So, how does one communicate about what they're doing when working between two perspectives? Here is where strategy 2 and my 3-step exercise come in. Teaching strategy 2: unstacked perspectives and their family house rules. No matter how advanced the student was on their journey as emergent scholars, being able to transport concepts from one perspective or pedagogy to the other can be tricky. All teachers work in schools with specific language ideologies at play, mostly aligning with the code-switching perspective where autonomous languages are said to exist. For example, speaking English, or having an L2, or being a native speaker, etc. This means part of the job likely includes being able to explain how language teaching happens in their classroom, and they will likely need to invoke code-switching terminology to explain stuff to administrators or parents or students. To address these exact kinds of scenarios, I developed a second strategy that I imagine will strike many as odd. I present both theories, both approaches, as running parallel, as existing separately with all keywords and concepts being defined differently and not interacting at all. This strategy was inspired by a very common critique of translanguaging theory, that the earliest formulations appeared to metaphorically layer translanguaging theory on top of code-switching pedagogies. As mentioned earlier, at the beginning of my learning of translanguaging theory, I actively searched for keywords and concepts that almost meant the same thing. This was an effect of my perceiving translanguaging as on top and code-switching as underneath, which then led me to believe that some keywords and concepts might overlap in meaning and in definition. Note how I was trying to force the perspectives to work together. It would take years before I realized that approaching these bodies of work as stacked perspectives created too much terminological confusion, as too many keywords and concepts appeared to conflict at a theoretical level. Folks familiar with Ofelia Garcia's work know she often uses explanatory metaphors and analogies, from bicycles to four-wheelers to flows and corrientes. Inspired by Garcia's attentiveness to metaphors and analogies, I metaphorically unstacked the theories and put them on their side, running parallel to one another, as two ways to see the world, as two differently produced realities, as two perspectives looking at the same mountain, or language user. Once unstacked, it became easier for students to grasp what each perspective offers, creates, and promotes. This approach would inspire the list of the 5 premises, assertions, and assumptions, each modified depending on which perspective is being utilized, either code-switching or translanguaging. Indeed, it is far easier making these kinds of blunt assertions when dealing with one perspective at a time. And to emphasize how different the terminology can be, I add another simple metaphor. I tell students that each perspective, each side of the chart, represents a supportive family of concepts who have 5 family house rules, those 5 house rules being the 5 parameters listed on each side of the illustration. These family members, the individual concepts, uncritically support each other. They back each other up. They provide ideological and theoretical support for each other. And they could care less about what the other family, or perspective, has to say about interpreting the world. Importantly, I explain how each family member, each concept, is blindly supportive to their other family members. to the other concepts, and that each family member depends on the next family member to exist. For example, the category bilingual. When we say a child is bilingual, that concept offers support to the existence of an L2, which offers support to the existence of an L1, which offers support to the category native speaker, which offers support to the concept non-native speaker, and so on and so on, until an entire epistemological worldview emerges that tends to create and promote a specific kind of linguistic reality with specific kinds of language users. If done well, students will begin to sense how invoking a single version of a concept, a family member, necessarily drags many other concepts, many other family members, along for the ride. Finally, and most importantly, when a family member visits someone else's house, they must follow their house rules. In other words, when a concept is transported from one pedagogical perspective to the other, how any keyword or concept is used must be qualified or explained in such a way that uses specific kinds of phrases and keywords to hold true, that is, to not break the house rules. This is perhaps the most complex part. Up next, I walk through one modifiable three-step exercise to practice using terminology while following the house rules. The three-step exercise, producing parallel analyses in the classroom. Transporting concepts across perspectives is theoretically difficult. However, it is far more difficult without a firm understanding of the ideological assumptions held within the code-switching perspective. In my courses, we walk through three steps of analysis, each level offering an opportunity to differentiate translanguaging and code-switching perspectives. First, I request a description using only code-switching terminology. Second, I request a description using only translanguaging terminology. And third, I request a description that uses both perspectives, what happens in a school setting, where the transport of terminology and concepts require qualifications to hold true. At the beginning, and to build confidence, having students work in groups might be more successful in producing simple and obvious observations. And it is those deceptively simple observations that I'm trying to elicit from my students. For example, I may request students describe a bilingual child from an assigned reading in simple statements using as much terminology as possible from only the code-switching perspective. The following simple statements hold true because they stay within the parameters of all the family house rules. Yet, notice how even these simple-looking statements are theoretically nuanced, particularly with the deployment of the named language concept.
Sample statement from the code-switching perspective. Quote, that bilingual child speaks two languages, the language named English and the language named Spanish. That child has a split linguistic repertoire and code switches between their L1 and L2. End quote.
At this point, I would affirm the student's description of the split bilingual subject as correct or accurate or holding true from within the code switching perspective. The more keywords and concepts students deploy, the better. The next step of analysis requires students to flip the LRC and describe the same child following the house rules of the translanguaging perspective. Immediately, the students feel aware that everything said, even when using the exact same words, likely means something totally different. It also becomes more difficult to accidentally import and recreate the idea of the split bilingual subject. Luckily, the student only needs to follow the new house rules to remain correct in their new analysis.
Sample statement from the translanguaging perspective. Quote, that child is a languager deploying linguistic features from his unified linguistic repertoire. This means a code switch between an L1 and L2 does not technically happen, because autonomous grammatical systems called named languages do not exist as pre-made categories we can use. End quote.
This description of the same child, but from the translanguaging perspective, holds true. While this level of analysis appears quite complex, in actuality, many students quickly note how the new analysis looks like an inversion or a qualification or a meta description of the code switching house rules. Giving students many opportunities to run through this exercise is key. This exercise can be run as a whole class, in small groups, or individually. From a written 5-minute pop quiz to a more nuanced analysis done for homework. The final step is the transporting of keywords across perspectives when speaking within institutional contexts structured by the ideological assumptions held within code-switching pedagogies. What is difficult about this last step is how the house rules must be referenced to make a statement that can hold true on both sides, which means the student's metalinguistic awareness must be supercharged to say something like the following.
Sample statement using both sides of the LRC. Quote, that child is a languager who is institutionally categorized as bilingual, but pulling from their unified linguistic repertoire. Within this languager's repertoire are institutional groupings of linguistic features that make up the concept named English and the concept named Spanish. Those concepts are referred to as grammatically isolatable named languages. End quote.
In this last statement, every concept was qualified to hold true from both perspectives and across all 10 house rules. However, note how each of the sample statements were about an individual, a child. This same three-step analysis can be practiced with, for example, a piece of spoken or written text. When eliciting descriptions about actual language use, I tend to choose sentences that appear simple but have wide potential. For example, in the following sentence, a teacher might first focus on the concept named English and the concept named Spanish.
Sample sentence 1. Quote, that party was lit, pero muy crowded. End quote.
However, there is more to discover. Some students might include the word lit as a code switch to Black language or African American vernacular English or youth slang. This can become a productive discussion on what constitutes a code and whether or not the grouping of linguistic features known as AAVE constitutes a named language within American education. Then, when flipping over to the translanguaging perspective, suddenly the languaging of those pre-made concepts named English, Spanish, AAVE, and even youth slang feel far less theoretically problematic. Or, rather, translanguaging simply feels more capable of talking about different kinds of languaging. Additionally, the inclusion of the word lit serves as a reminder that translanguaging does not require the presence of more than one internationally recognized named language. Implications for racial justice. A reality beyond the split. The Languaging Representations Chart, or the LRC, was created to help fast-track the learning of each family of concepts so that the politically subversive aspects of translanguaging theory are not only understood, but accepted as a legitimate path forward in American education. In my opinion, the most subversive, complex, and interesting dimensions of translanguaging theory are far easier to grasp when learners are not constantly attempting to reconcile older theoretical and political assertions within new ones. Following this line of thought, we might be more careful, or perhaps entirely avoid, uncritically importing the split bilingual subject into research that attempts to reimagine the world through a translanguaging perspective. Without attempting to create a reality beyond the split, that is, transcend the figure of the split bilingual subject, I fear that much of the decolonial potential of translanguaging theory will be lost. Using the unstacking method may also help educators overcome similar dichotomies that work to solidify racial hierarchies between approaches to knowledge production. For example, it has been my experience that many racialized educators are rightfully suspicious of, quote, elite academic theories, end quote, and they preferred reading about the, quote, practical knowledge and classroom methods used by real-life racialized teachers, end quote. Often, these two forms of knowledge are framed as perpetual enemies, as a simplified oppositional dichotomy of theory versus practice, or theorist versus practitioner, with each positioned as better somehow, usually based on how data is collected, produced, and analyzed. For example, quantitative versus qualitative, or empirical versus experiential, positivist versus interpretivist, and so on. But ignoring the real-life theoretical knowledges emerging from our classrooms can only hinder racial justice in multilingual education, particularly when racialized multilingual educators are positioned as supposedly only practitioners, but never quite theorists. Yet, what would happen if we unstacked the theorist versus practitioner approaches and ran them parallel to one another, with neither vision being better, both being legitimate, both producing severe blind spots, both offering, creating, and promoting a version of reality and both making theoretical and political claims about what a classroom should look like. The goal, in this case, would be to deconstruct the perceived separation to show how both are co-constituted, meaning pedagogical practice is required to create better theory, and vice versa. And finally, there is a dangerous limitation in the design of the LRC. Specifically, the chart only shows the heads of speakers, which will likely recreate the idea that language primarily exists as, quote, linguistic features that live in our heads, appearing separate from all the other ways that we communicate. It's clear, then, a supplemental version of the LRC eventually needs to be created to include the languager's entire body, and not just the head, which would emphasize how translanguaging also includes multimodal forms of languaging, including bodily expression, as well as the cultural, emotional, and spiritual dimensions of communication and community. For teachers and students that want a bit more guidance, I encourage you to watch the 30-minute YouTube video explanation of the Languaging Representations Chart, as well as my previous YouTube videos on code switching and translanguaging concepts. With that said, the LRC should never be set in stone. It should be adapted and modified by instructors to best meet the needs of their students, who they know far better than I do. For those folks, I have provided a downloadable blank LRC that might be used to scaffold your own lessons. While the chart is effective at unstacking the worldviews entailed in each perspective, it will be the instructor's job to emphasize how each perspective offers, creates, and promotes its own political vision and worldview. After all, let's not forget that all representations of languaging are political. You've been listening to The Languaging Representations Chart, Teaching and Learning Translanguaging Theory, published in Racial Justice in Multilingual Education. Remember, you can find all my articles on maestromikemena.com. Once again, this is Mike, and I'll see you around.